Hey, how's it going? Hey, I'm Lee McCormick. Welcome to Tramps Like Us, the Bruce Springsteen podcast, episode 107, Cover Me, volume 7. I'm joined by two of my favorite guest co-hosts, Eric Miller from the Pods and Saws Network and Brian Jacobs. We're talking about Springsteen covers for this show, one song by Bruce covering someone else, and five songs of other artists covering Bruce. Thanks for listening via the website trampslikeuspod.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you found the show. Stay in touch via the Facebook group page, Tramps Like Us, a Bruce Springsteen podcast. Let's get to it. Episode 107, Cover Me, Volume 7.
Cover me, cover me, cover me.
Okay, so we're up to volume 7 of these Springsteen Cover Me episodes, where we're doing five songs of people covering a Springsteen song, and then we'll do one song of Springsteen covering somebody else. So, great to be joined by Eric Miller and Brian Jacobs. How are you guys doing today?
Real good.
Hello, hello. Nice to see you again, Lee.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys about some Springsteen music and some other artists, right? So, we did another Cover Me episode previously, and that was a lot of fun, so let's do this one. So I'm going to kick it off. We're going to start with Springsteen covering somebody else, right? This Cover Me episode. So I've been on this Sinatra kick lately, right? So my pick is Springsteen covering a Sinatra song, Angel Eyes, right? And this is from, they did an 80th birthday celebration for Frank in 1995, and they had all these celebrities and musicians and artists kind of paying tribute to him and performing some of his songs, and they brought him out, and he's right there in the front row, like seeing everybody pay tribute to him. And Springsteen kicked the night off with this great version of Angel Eyes, which has always been probably one of my favorite Sinatra songs. Comes off one of my favorite Sinatra records, Only the Lonely, he did in 58 and for Capitol. And this is when Sinatra kind of was coming up with concept records, right? He would come up with a title of a record, Only the Lonely, and then he would fit all these kind of stylized songs to fit that theme, right? So this song is like all like saloon singers, torch songs, right? Like songs for the late nights and the wee hours in the morning and stuff like that, right? And just a great song, that, and it's got like a bluesy Harlem Nocturne vibe. You know, Springsteen's version, obviously you can't really touch the Sinatra version. It's a different type of singer, different type of song, right? So Springsteen goes the folk song, singer-songwriter route, and he kind of just does it like bare bones, almost like the Nebraska Tom Jones style Springsteen, right? Which is like very faint acoustic guitars, just going through the chords, and then Springsteen with that kind of low, dark voice going through these great lyrics, right? What do you guys think of this song?
Obviously, it's a different beast, but the spirit is the same, right? There's this loneliness to it, like you said. You know, the original is crooner and fully orchestrated and stuff, and you know, you just nailed it. You described it perfectly. You know, I hope when you drop it in here, you include the full intro, or at least part of it, because, you know, Bruce describes, you know, he first heard Frank and, you know, in a Jersey jukebox, of course, that's probably embellished. You know, my mom and I were searching for our dad, and we went in and the bar was smoky and cold and dark in the corner, like, you know, whatever, but
it's a magic rat.
Right, exactly, right, but super charming, of course. And you know, it you know, I think I did he change a couple lyrics? Like, I noticed there's like a, you know, I was reading the lyrics along, and like, he, you know, the Sinatra say the laugh's on me, whereas Bruce says the joke's on me. I think there's just a couple of variations where Bruce kind of detours a word or two here and there, which I thought kind of added
take some liberties, you know,
yeah, but it, you know, it's stuck with the spirit of it, right? So
it's like been done by so many different people, right? It was written by, I should say, music by Matt Dennis. The lyric was done by this guy, Earl Brent. It was from a film in 1953 called Jennifer, written in 1946, right? Nat King Cole did it, Willie Nelson, who else? Ray Charles, Chet Baker. Actually, Sting. I don't really like Sting. I'm not a fan of Sting. But Sting does a version of it from Leaving Las Vegas, which is, I think it's a really good version. I love that song. And, you know, he does it justice in that. and that that soundtrack. Yeah, it's a great song. The melody, I love the writing of this song. The melody leaps up and down, right? He's got that drink up, all you people, everything, and then it goes right down into the verse. Try to think. Right. I'm not. It's just so up and down, right? And like, obviously Sinatra sings the fuck out of it, right? But Bruce Springsteen does a very good job. And to be noted, Frank Sinatra is sitting there like 15 feet in front of him, like right, looking at him. Right.
Yeah, that's not that. That's not too nerve wracking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, just one other point I want to make before I hand it over to our Mr. Brian Jacobs, dear friend here, is like you could tell, you know, Bruce when he does covers, like he really does it with care. Like he does it in his style, but he goes out of his way to like hit the, you know, to pay tribute to the artist. Like I'm thinking of when he did, you know, Don't Change for NXS, and he did Bee Gees songs, so many covers that he does. Like he really is smart about, you know, trying to do his version, but, you know, in the style of the original, if that makes any sense. Right. And you could tell when he's playing this, like you just said, with Sinatra sitting right there, it's not like something he worked up like the day before. Like you could tell this is in his DNA, right? Like this is something, you know, I said maybe that story was embellished, but I'm sure there's a lot of truth to that. Like he probably did grow up and, you know, it was, you know, Sinatra cast a big shadow in Jersey. So like you can tell like he's feeling it and he came to it with the appropriate gravitas, right? And respect.
I'm not sure I ever heard him do this before, so this is a treat, and I couldn't help but think in listening to it, first of all, it's fantastic, I love it. I couldn't help but think, you know, sometimes I'm going to guess that everybody has maybe felt this way once in a while. Sometimes when Springsteen strips it down on stage to just an acoustic, sometimes, you know, his, in the moment, his artistic vision, whatever, takes him to some other places melodically. And sometimes, in my opinion, he can be careless with the way he sings. Sometimes he mumbles and sometimes he goes pretty monotone. He did not do that on this one. He knew that he had to hit that melody and hit it hard. Old Blue Eyes sitting right in front of him, you know,
because I mean the cards are stacked against him because it's Springsteen, right? He's not known for being a pop singer, but you know,
right,
he's doing his best to salute, you know, the chairman of the board here, right? So
but here's the thing, Springsteen is such a phenomenal vocalist, you know, and he's at his best when he belts. I think everybody knows that, but he's such a talented singer, and sometimes when he gets into that like little bit of like monotone going and stuff like that, it's what he wants to do. He's the artist. He can do whatever the hell he wants. But once in a while, I feel a little let down by that. But he nailed this one. He absolutely nailed it. It's a beautiful performance and it gets right to the point. I mean, what is it? Maybe 3 minutes long at best. It's great. And his guitar part is very stripped down. It's great. It's a winner.
Yeah, very good. And I love the last line. Every version has that last line, excuse me while I disappear, right? It's a great line for the song.
Great line.
End off, right? Springsteen really hits this good, right? Capturing the, you know, the deep blueness of the saloon singer Sinatra, right? Springsteen paying tribute to Sinatra at the 80th birthday celebration happening in 1995.
Well, I'm here tonight not just to salute Frank's artistry, but because, well, he is the patron saint of New Jersey. And since his rise from the streets of Hoboken, Frank has basically owned the place. But he has been gracious enough to loan me a small piece of it by the beach. We first met at a party about 6 months ago, and we talked about the Jersey Shore. And I was glad to find that his conversation was still peppered with the kinds of words that have made our state great. So, my first recollection of Frank's voice was coming out of a jukebox. I was in a dark bar on a Sunday afternoon when my mother and I went in searching for my father. And she said, I always remember, she said, listen to that. That's Frank Sinatra. He's from New Jersey. It was a voice filled. It was a voice filled with bad attitude, life, beauty, excitement, a nasty sense of freedom, sex, and a sad knowledge of the ways of the world. Every song seemed to have as its postscript, and if you don't like it, here's a punch in the kisser. You know. But it was the deep blueness of Frank's voice that affected me the most. And while his music became synonymous with black tie, good life, the best booze, women, sophistication, his blues voice was always a sound of hard luck and men late at night with the last $10 in their pockets trying to figure a way out. So tonight I want to sing something from my favorite Sinatra album, Only the Lonely. And on behalf, yeah, that's one of the greatest ones. And on behalf of all New Jersey, Frank, I want to say, hail, brother. You sang out our soul. Happy birthday. So. So from one Italian singer to another, from for old Blue Eyes, this is Angel Eyes. I try to think that love's not around, but still, it's uncomfortably near. Tonight my heart is losing ground, 'cause my angel eyes ain't here. Angel eyes the devil sent, they glow unbearably bright, and need I say that my love is misspent, misspent with angel eyes tonight. So drink up all you people, order anything you see, drink up all you happy people, 'cause the drinks and the jokes on me. Now pardon me, man, 'cause I gotta run. You see, the facts are uncommonly clear. I wanna know who's her new number one, and why my angel eyes ain't here. Excuse me while I disappear.
All right, so Brian, you got the first pick. What was your first cover version of somebody covering a Springsteen song?
I don't know if I have a lot of background on this, but this is a guy that is just credited to Aram, I guess it's Aram, A-R-A-M. This is the first track on the One Step Up, Two Steps Back Springsteen covers CD from, what, around 95, maybe? Yeah. And are you familiar with this collection, Lee?
Yeah, I have that. It's a good double CD set, right? There's some good gems on there, right. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And this is the lead-off track. I had this when it came out, and this is a great collection. And this is, I mean, talk about taking a song and kind of, you know, twisting it to your own likeness, or, you know, or whatever you want to say about it. Something in the Night, you know, is a pretty dirgy song and a song I dearly love, but this guy just absolutely turns this song around. He, you know, what would you call that? Like a gallop that he, it's like a country gallop. He turns this into, right. That's just so different. And the, you know, the wordless melody that Springsteen kind of intros the song with and takes it through the outro, turns into a, you know, played on the harmonica. And I've always just loved this. I had to go with this one. This was, and this was a tough one. I put a lot of time into, I think I counted 5 CDs of Springsteen covers. I listened to all of them this week.
Wow. Plus, good effort, man.
plus every Southside Johnny Springsteen, Springsteen penned song I could find. And all the Gary U.S. Bonds ones from those two albums in the early 80s. And this one came out on top. I really love this one. And that's about it.
Yeah, cool. I don't know this guy, Aram. Are they a band or is it a guy? I guess it's a guy.
I think it's a guy.
Yeah, I don't really know him. But yeah, this is a cool one. I like the intro, how the band just gradually starts up, right, and getting that train on the track, right? It's like the country train feel on this one. I dig the harmonica, like you said, replacing Bruce's vocal, the whoas that he does, but it's so great, right? And they replace it with a harmonica because nobody's ever going to be able to sing it like Springsteen, right? So let's put a harmonica hitting that part.
Yeah, perfect, yep.
Yeah, you hear this guy's southern accent coming out in the singing, so, you know, that's kind of a character thing, which is cool. The drums sound really good, I noticed, on this song, right? The guy's playing a train beat on the drums, but he's got
his... What kind of beat is that? Like when it's kind of like it's like a little bit of like a gallop like that.
It's like an eighth note. It's like a fast eighth note shuffle on the snare drum, with like putting like accents in there, right? So you're just playing straight, but you put like little accents in there, and that kind of gives it the momentum, right? And on this one, the way he's playing it, he's got his snares really loosened on the snare drum, so they're not tightened, so you don't get a good crack, so you get like you hear the rattle of the snare drum, which is a good little trick, so it actually sounds like a train, kind of you get that little rattle of the train, which I like, right? So good arrangement on this, you know, which is a possible, when you have a good songwriter that has a good written song, you can kind of transform the arrangement in a lot of ways, and it'll kind of go that way because it's just such a good written song, right? What did you think, Eric?
True.
Yeah, I mean, I like this. I like the departure from the original, and everything you guys said, I appreciate about it, right? The only kind of the slight drawback is it, because of that driving, galloping train, you kind of lose a bit of the dynamics, right? Like I like in the bridge in the original when it drops out and it's kind of naked. It's just Bruce and just the bass drum, I think, right? Yeah. And then it comes back bombastic and so forth, right? So this, you know, this just, you know, it does drop out a little bit, but there's, you know, nice guitar in there and flourishes and stuff, but it just doesn't feel as naked, so the dynamics don't kind of play as much, right? But, you know, aside from that, you know, I thought it was interesting. His voice isn't my favorite. It's not, you know, I like belters more, right? And this, he's maybe not that on this song, right? But, you know, it captures the spirit of Bruce and certainly the mood of the song. So, yeah, interesting pick. I never would have heard it. And when I saw the name, I assumed it was a Turkish guy. I don't know, Aram. You know, Aram. I was going to ask you, Brian, if you knew who Aram was. You know?
I actually, apologies, I had so little time to prepare for this. I did Google him this week. If it's the guy that I found, he's not American, so he sure does sing with a southern accent. But
yeah, because I made that comment, like I'm like, is this guy from like Alabama or Israel? You know,
right?
It's like when you hear like Mick Jagger singing like country songs, and he puts that like fake southern accent, so you get this like pseudo British southern accent.
Yeah, the southern British accent.
Yeah, something in the night. Yeah, the ending is a little iffy. I would have maybe tried something different. They go into this like arranged ending where it's like it's almost like the Rolling Stones' Mother's Little Helper, where it goes into that ding 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 ding. It's almost too happy.
Right?
Like this is like dramatic like kind of song, and then it ends on this ding 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 kind of thing. Right? So I would try something else different there, you know.
Yeah, you could, you know, if you weren't listening to the words to this, you'd be like, oh wow, what a neat and peppy song. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, this is one of Springsteen's darkest darkest songs as far as, you know, looking at himself in the mirror, I think, you know?
So my first pick is from a guy named Ari Hest. And Ari Hest is a singer-songwriter out of New York. He was on Columbia for a bunch of years, put out like 10 or 15 records or something like that. He just recently, he did a lot of touring with Judy Collins, right? The folk singer. And they actually did a duet record that was nominated as like Best Folk Album like 2 or 3 years ago or something. So, you know, he's been around for a good while. And, you know, I've been blessed to present him a few times. In fact, the clip I'm sharing is from my living room, full disclosure. It's Ari Hess doing a version of I'm on Fire, right? And there's a gazillion covers of I'm on Fire out there. I'm not going to lie. It's probably, I would wager it's in the top three most covered Springsteen songs, right? easily. But and there's a lot of really good ones, right? And it really comes
we played
down.
My version of I'm on Fire on the last Cover Me episode that the
I love
did.
That version. I do. I actually saved that to my iTunes.
Oh, thanks.
I put that on once in a while.
Yeah, that song's panty dropper, man.
That happens a lot in my house when I'm playing it.
Well, I think the trick to I'm on Fire is, you know, obviously is the vocal wailing on the outro stuff, right? If you can nail that, right, that's, you know, that's, and if you can do it well, it's a bit show-offy, right? And, you know, Ari Hess has a voice. One of the people that, maybe it was Brian Joyce, somebody said, was commenting about his voice, and he said, Ari Hess has a voice that sounds like a chord. Like he has this really full, rich voice, right? And it might not be on full display here, but, you know, he has this really engaging voice, and he just nails that stuff on the outro, right? And his playing is, you know, pretty straightforward finger picker style, right? But, you know, just this version always gets me, you know. So Ari Hess, I'm on Fire. And to go back to Bruce's intro about Sinatra, if you don't like it, here's a punch in the kisser for you.
It's good, it's not bad, right? It's a solo acoustic finger picking, like it's the way, like, when you hear the song, the way Springsteen did it on Born in the USA, you can hear that it started out like this. Like, he probably had it during Nebraska. Like, he was probably wrote it on an acoustic guitar sitting on the edge of his bed, right? So this is what, you know, Ari's doing with this song. And I like his guitar. He's playing this Gibson acoustic guitar, which is similar to mine. So, yeah, I kind of connected with that. So what was this? This was a house concert, Eric, and this was your place?
Yeah, I did a house concert, and I streamed it online, and he... I presented him a couple of times. There was one time where I think our friend Craig Smith even opened for him, where I had, it was Ari and two other kind of veteran singer songwriters who shall remain nameless, because Ari sort of blew them off the stage. And when it came time to do an encore, they were like, they just want to get out of there because Ari was next level to them. Right. Mm-hmm. Which was interesting. And Craig was in that mix too. So that was a fun story. You can ask him about that someday.
It's such a straightforward cover, but it, you know, the word that I was thinking to describe his voice was, you know, at least on this track, is like subtly commanding, you know, very rich and kind of perfect. And his falsetto is really clean. So it actually like kind of takes Bruce's falsetto at the end and like cleans it up a little bit, you know? But it's a perfect and perfectly sympathetic arrangement that doesn't stray much from the original, but being that it's so stripped down, it stands apart from it. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
All right, cool. Let's play that live from Eric's place. I'm on Fire.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone now? Got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is he good to you? And does he do to you the things that I do? I can take you high. Oh, someone took a knife, baby, edging and dull, and dug a 6-inch valley from the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. Only cool my desire.
I should point out, when he did play that in my living room, immediately every woman got up and just dropped their panties. I just want to mention that.
Yeah, it happens with that song.
Probably a couple guys too.
And at least 75% of the men as well.
I've seen it happen before. You got another one there, Brian? Another cover of a Bruce Springsteen song for us here?
Yeah, so I've done this is our second time doing this with you, Lee, in this series. And the two that I picked last time were from that Badlands Nebraska tribute album, both of them. And this one is also from that. I just think it's such a winning collection of covers. And this one is Crooked Fingers doing Mansion on the Hill. And I picked this one. This one struck me the very first time I heard it because, you know, they're taking a really simple folk song, you know, musically, you know, just him and his strumming his acoustic guitar. They put together some kind of musical loop for it that, you know, sounds, you know, for a cover from Nebraska, it sounds out of place, certainly at first blush. And I've always thought that it works brilliantly. I mean, it sounds different than most any Springsteen cover you'll hear. But the vocal is very much upfront and present, so that you don't lose any of the story. And I feel like you don't lose any of the essence of the song, even with the different musical backing. I think it's really beautiful. I think it's really different. And I think it's absolutely killer.
Do we know anything about Crooked Fingers? Are they,
I actually have an album of theirs that I haven't dug into in a long time. I don't know a ton about them. This lines up with the limited time I had to, to prepare for this. So my apologies.
No, yeah, thanks for doing your homework.
Yeah, I don't know them either. Crooked Fingers. I don't know those guys.
Yeah, I don't know them either. The thing that you said that was charming, you know, it, once I got it stuck in my head, the U2 Where the Streets Have No Name kind of droney thing, that kind of turns me off to this a little bit. Nebraska is not really like a go-to Bruce thing for me. That's not where I like him best, you know. Having said that, I almost picked the Chris Cornell version of at least one song from here. I've seen him do Atlantic City, Highway Patrolman, State Trooper, all on one show even.
By the way, if I may jump in real quick, has anybody ever not covered Atlantic City? I almost picked another version of Atlantic City, and I'm like, oh, I picked Atlantic City last time, and you had two other people that picked Atlantic City, and you almost picked, you sent us a clip of another Atlantic City, Eric.
Well, it's because Atlantic City has the street cred because it's on Nebraska, but it's also kind of a catchy melody because it's almost, I wouldn't say it's a hit, but there was a video. So it's the most recognizable song off the record. So people kind of like to hit that probably, you know.
It's an amazing song.
It is, yeah.
But anyway, apologies for interrupting.
No worries, yeah. I saw Chris Cornell do Atlantic City in Atlantic City, which was awesome.
That is awesome.
So I almost picked that, but I couldn't find any good quality versions of it, right? I mean, I think they capture the vibe on this. It's not my favorite, but, you know, I don't dislike it. You know what I mean? It's not, like I said, Nebraska just isn't a go-to for me. And like a droney version of a Nebraska song isn't going to inspire me necessarily, you know, I'm down. I get it. I, you know, there's quality there. I think they got the spirit of it and so forth. So, you know, good pick.
I liked it more than I thought I wanted to like it. I wanted to rip on it, you know, just off the top. But, you know, there's 16 notes piano off the top there, kind of reminded me of like, is this like a Billy Joel kind of thing? And then it goes into this kind of pulsating sequence, almost like, remind me like the Who, Bob O'Reilly, like a sequenced keyboard going through the chord changes, kind of like Bob O'Reilly kind of thing. The one thing I didn't like about it was the singing. Like, this guy's got this throaty singing voice. And it's even more inaudible than Bruce, if that's possible, right? Like, he's got the voice. But that's the one thing I didn't like about it. I liked the suicide vibe to it, the band, right? Suicide, Alan Vega, that kind of, you know, the rhythmic pulsating feel of it, the way it builds, climaxing the song, right? If I had to be critical, I would say the drums need to be louder. I wanted like a more of a beat. It comes in and towards the end, the beat rhythm kind of builds up on it. But, you know, maybe louder guitar, that's just nitpicking in it, right? So
Let me jump in real quick. I'm not sure if you guys know the story of that Nebraska tribute album, but the original idea of the album was that since Bruce recorded that on a little four track at home, that all of the recordings, all of the artists were supposed to make four track recordings to keep in that spirit. And that ended up getting blown up. I think they might have said one of the first ones was Dar Williams, which I picked last time because her production was actually pretty big, and it ended up being bigger than not recorded on more than four tracks. But I have a feeling this one was probably done on four track. It's hard to imagine really how many instruments were on this one, because it just seems like kind of one big soup of a loop, but I don't know.
And I like the fade out on it too. I like the fade out. There's an art to a good fade out, right? It's very effective.
I agree.
It doesn't happen very much anymore. You don't hear very many fade outs on songs.
Yeah,
I like a nice good fade out. This one works effectively.
There's a place out on the edge of town, sir, rising above the factories and the I can remember that mansion on
All right, Mansion on the Hill, Crooked Fingers. All right, Eric, you got another one for us?
I do. This is by a singer. He's kind of like a hair metal guy, so we're going a bit off the beaten path in terms of hipsters and so forth, right? This is he was in a band called Wasted, spelled with a Y. Y-S-T-E-D, of course, right? And then he was in a band called Taiketo, and that's where I discovered him. They put out two records in like 1993. They were on Geffen, and they just got, you know, they were getting a little bit of a push, and then, you know, Nirvana hit on the same label, and then they were just completely just brushed aside, right? But he has this great, you know, striving male voice like Jimmy Jameson of Survivor is who he often reminds me of, right? And, you know, since that time, he's gone on to do all kinds of solo work and, you know, sing with, you know, just a bunch of different sort of projects and so forth. And it's always kind of centered around his voice. And, you know, one of those guys that's way more successful in Europe and can play festivals there and so forth. But and Taiketo reunites here and there. But it's his version of Further On Down the Road, right? And that's from The Rising, which is my favorite Bruce album. So it's already got, you know, it's a singer that I've loved for decades singing a song that's upbeat on my favorite Bruce record. So just the combination of those ingredients, I'm all in, right? And it just so happens he's touring with a friend of mine, Dan Reed, on this particular performance. And they're doing like singer-songwriter duo kind of thing where they would take turns singing songs. And he just pulled this out of his hat and he's kind of reading the lyrics along as he goes just to make sure he's got them right and stuff. But, and it's a bit strummy, you know, I get that. But for me, it's just the voice. It's just the, you know, again, it's the performance of the voice. So, you know, Danny Vaughn singing Further On Down the Road, Further On Up the Road. I always get the, I mix the title up.
Yeah, that live clip. I thought you looked like Stephen Piercy a little bit there. I thought so. Yeah, it was cool. And yeah, live solo acoustic thing. Not much to say about it except it's a good version, right? It's the same vibe as the Springsteen thing. Same arrangement, right. Same feel. He's just playing it on acoustic guitar. One guy, right? So yeah, man, good version. I really like the. There's a Johnny Cash version that he did during like the Rick Rubin era of his career, and that's a great one. That's always been a contender for one of these episodes. One of these days I'm gonna play that one. But yeah, this one's good. This is one of my favorite songs off The Rising too. It's like the one kind of hard rocking song off The Rising,
right? Yeah, and he just kind of, like I said, it's a bit strummy, but it's unapologetic. It's just kind of in your face. It's just going, right? Driving. So
yeah, this one's all about his voice. You know, he just tears through that vocal with that powerful voice. And yeah, I don't, other than that, I don't have a ton to add to it. Very enjoyable. Yeah, it's basically taking that full band version and just planting it on a strum and an acoustic guitar with a strong voice, and you got a good version right there.
Right on. Yeah, and I also wanted to pick something a little bit off the beaten path, right? So there's a gazillion Springsteen covers out there, right? This isn't one that you would just happen to stumble on. It's just one that I know because I'm a Danny Vaughan fan, you know?
Right.
So I wanted to share it with other Springsteen fans as well.
You'll have to forgive me, but that last one just put me in the mood. I'm going to play a Bruce Springsteen song.
Okay. When the road is dark and the seat is sold, when a gun is cocked, bullets cold, when the miles are marked in the blood and gold, and I'll meet you further on up the road. Got on my dead man's loot in my smiling skull ring, my lucky graveyard boots, and a song to sing. I got a song to sing to keep me out of the cold, and I'll meet you further on up the road, further on up the road, further on up the road, when the way is dark and the night is cold, when sunny morning
mind, searching through the dust, looking for a sign. If there's a light up ahead, well, brother, I don't know, but I got this fever burning in my soul. So let's take the good times as they go, and I'll meet you further on.
So I got the last pick. I'm going to hit you with a song I just heard for the first time about a week ago, an impromptu purchase. I was bored, pandemic bored, right? So I'm going to go for a Sunday drive, and I needed some new tunes. So I'm just like, I don't know. I just kind of browsed iTunes, and I said the Mavericks put out a record in 2019 for their 30th anniversary, right? Country Tex-Mex band, the Mavericks. They did this record called Play the Hits, which is just a grouping of cover songs, songs that they love, songs they're influenced by, songs that they cut their teeth on playing in the bars and stuff like that. So they did a version of Hungry Heart on this record, and I thought it was really cool. It was really groovy shuffle on this. You know, I love the Mavericks. Let me tell a quick story about the Mavericks. They're probably one of the greatest live bands I've ever seen, and it's all because of this one show. I saw them in 1997. They played in Toronto at the end of their tour. They were playing two final dates in Toronto and Ottawa, January 24th and 25th, 1997, going across the border, and they were going to record these for a live album kind of thing, right? So they're going across the border, and they were delayed at the border. They had problems with the paperwork. Then they had bus troubles, so they split up. They all kind of went rogue, and they were trying to get to the show on time. And then, you know, we had a Toronto, Southern Ontario snowstorm that day, and it was just nuts. And I remember I'm down to the show with my buddy Johnny, trying to get tickets, or we had tickets picking up at the will call, and nobody's there. It's like, and it's like 6 o'clock, and we're like, what's going on? The band's not even there yet, and the rumors are spreading the show might be canceled or whatever. So then we just kind of stood outside waiting for the show to happen, and the snowstorm's coming down, right? It's a dramatic moment, and all of a sudden you see the bus pull up and the gear, right? And it's like 7:30, 8 o'clock. The show was supposed to start at like 7:30, right? And it's Junior Brown opening for the Mavericks, like two bands. Oh, wow. I love, so it was fucking killer, right? So then the band is just like loading the gear off the truck as quickly as they could, like, and the people are lined up there, right? So the crew put the show together in probably like 45 minutes. By like 8:30, 8:39, Junior Brown hit the stage, right? By like 9:30, 10, the Mavericks hit the stage, and there's like a sold-out crowd. Everybody's been cold, stuck in the snow in the winter, and here's Junior Brown and the Mavericks, and they just kicked ass the whole night, right? It was just the spirit of the band and the road crew and the audience was just totally united in this incredible moment, and it was like palpable, the energy and the musical spirit. It was just, I know, I'm getting all excited talking about this show, right? And they put out this like live EP, and there's like a few songs captured from that show. So they've always been one of my favorite bands, right? So, you know, I just love this version of Hungry Heart they did.
I love the Mavericks. I do have an album of theirs. I also have Raul Malo's first solo album. I'm pretty sure it's his first solo album.
Great singer, right?
He's one of the best, one of the very best. He's a real crooner. In recent years, my one brother, I got my brother that's the Springsteen Elvis Costello fan, my brother that's the Stones and Tom Petty fan. That brother has somehow become a big Mavericks fan, and he's seen them a couple of times live and has raved about them. I saw Raul Malo live once, about 15 minutes from my house here, surprisingly, in Germantown, the Germantown section of Philadelphia. And he was phenomenal. on that solo tour. Absolutely phenomenal. His voice was just so big. And that's probably going on 15, 18 years ago at this point. I'm becoming a bigger fan of them. When I saw you post that, I was like, boy, I'm not familiar with this album. And I looked it up on Spotify. I'm like, oh, let me check this out. I listened to the whole thing on the spot. It's fantastic.
It's good. Yeah, I previewed a few songs. Okay. I bought it because they do a version of Swingin' by John Anderson, which I love. Like, we were swinging, Little Charlotte. I love that song, right? And they did, I'm like, oh, they're covering Hungry Heart. Uh-huh. And they did Freddie Fender Before the Next Teardrop Falls. Yeah, it's just a really good album. Highly recommend. And they do have a few albums that I haven't heard yet, too. I love when there's a band that you love, but there's still music in their, you know, back catalog that you can go and discover.
And this was a good gem to discover.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, good pick. I mean, I'm not super familiar with the Mavericks. I know their sound and style, but I never bought anything. But I think it suits this, and, you know, it's right in your wheelhouse, Lee. So I... You know, as soon as I hit play on, I was like, of course, this is what Lee loves. Of course, this is awesome, right? Yeah, so, it swings, you know what I mean? But, you know, I don't have a whole lot to add to what you guys said. I don't have a lot of history on the Mavericks. But, you know, I dig it. Good pick. You know, very lively. There's also, like you said, live versions of this where they extend it out and there's a horn section and the whole deal, right? So,
yeah, for sure.
I got to mention, I love at the end of the song when that sax player takes a solo, because it's a swinging solo, mm-hmm. and it made me wish it went on about three times longer. because I think it is it either a short solo and then it fades, or it fades during the solo. I can't remember.
It's split. I think he splits up. They've split the chorus with a solo in between. I think.
I love that especially a sax solo just starts swinging like that. It's so special.
Yeah. It's, you got it all covered, man. You got a great song, Hungry Heart, right? You got Groovy Shuffle by Paul Deacon. I love the horns playing like the offbeats, giving that shuffle feel, doing the all the offbeats, swirling organ underneath there. It's almost like ice skating music, right? Like, you can see, and it's got that sound too, right? There's a lot of reverb on the vocals and the sound of the song, so you can kind of almost picture it coming out of a skating arena speaker sound, right? People skating, and then the bridge comes, and it's like, oh, skate backwards now, everybody, right? Right, yeah, just a good time song, right? The tremendous vocal stylings of Raul Malo. How can you go wrong, right? Good stuff.
He's one of the best.
A little Dwayne Eddy guitar lick that he's playing, like on the intro, the head there doing the licks. Good stuff, man.
He's a handsome man too, that Raul.
Oh yeah.
He is.
Took
right, so that's the show, guys. Thanks so much for your picks. We got some good songs there. Hope everybody dug that. Yeah, man, until next time. You guys got any plugs? What are you promoting these days, Brian?
Just trying to train a puppy.
Training puppies, living the dream.
Living the dream, right.
Yeah, nothing to plug, really. I mean, just thanks for having me back on. You know, it's probably been a year since I did anything on Pods and Sods, or at least over 6 months. But, you know, maybe we'll get back to it. Craig and I have talked about a few things. But we do live streams, right? So check us out on Facebook, Pods and Sods Network. Yeah, you just kind of live hangouts to sort of cure the quarantine blues with some friends and podcasting buddies. So, yeah, come check us out there, Pods and Sods Network on Facebook.
Awesome.
All right, lots of fun, guys. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Lee.
So, that's the show, folks. Thanks for listening. You can find us on our website at trampslikeuspod.com. Communicate with us on Facebook at our Tramps Like Us podcast group page. Tramps Like Us podcast is a nonprofit audio fanzine created by fans for fans and is available for free. We are not affiliated with Bruce Springsteen or Columbia Sony Records. If you've heard any music you like, please find it and purchase it from brucespringsteen.net, Amazon, your local record store, or wherever music is sold. As always, gratitude and respect to Bruce Springsteen and all past and current members of the heart-stopping, pants-dropping, hard-rocking, booty-shaking, earth-quaking, love-making, Viagra-taking, history-making, testifying, death-defying, legendary E Street Band.
For the button on today's episode, and since I raved earlier in the show about that incredible live performance by the Mavericks at Massey Hall in Toronto, Friday, January 24th, 1997, let's play a song from that show. Despite the border issues, bus trouble, and snowstorm, the Mavericks kicked ass for myself and a few thousand fans. Here's What a Crying Shame from that night, released on their live EP, It's Now It's Live. If you listen hard enough, you may be able to hear me singing and cheering from the 10th row. Did not